See some familiar faces. Hello. It's been a long time since I've been here. Yes, I got saved in 1975, and I always have this really special place in my heart for the Mennonite, because if some of you probably knew Sue Anderson, she's the one that really led me to the Lord in a very dramatic sort of way, and I'd never met her before in my life. Didn't know the first thing about her. She didn't know about me. Basically, it was a pretty dramatic sort of thing. My life has changed. My whole life turned completely upside down from that. And so I'm always very thankful. I speak in a lot of Mennonite churches, many other churches, but I think the Mennonite church has a special place in my heart because of, I always think back to that day where my life was changed. So Ray of Hope, basically I was, this was the first church I attended on a Sunday morning when I got saved back in 75. I think it was the old building over there somewhere, and this became the new building. But anyhow, I had a lot of things to work through that year, and then somewhere through that, I was going to Jacob's Well and Bezak and a number of different places. I think Sue had a new converts class, and that's what I went to. And then coming to church here. Daryl Yonsey was the pastor. He had a very a positive effect on my life in the sense of mentoring, really getting a start there. I won't go into some other things there because of time and so on, but one day a friend in all these new friends that I was making as I became a Christian said, John, you need to apply for a job out at Ray of Hope. And my first response was, what's Ray of Hope? At that time, what was Ray of Hope? It was one building. I think you can go to the next slide there. One building, and that building was halfway between New Dundee and Petersburg, if you know where that is, out in the middle of nowhere on a farm. There were 7 staff members. When I was hired, I was the 8th staff member. And so it has grown, if you want to go to the next slide. This is Ray of Hope's head office now, downtown Kitchener, 659 King Street East. And if you go to the next slide, this is Ray of Hope today. We have 43 programs. We have 170 employees. And if you know anybody that has social work background and has a strong Christian mission, we have 7 positions open right now. Please grab the information I got at the back. Come down and apply for some jobs. We have addiction workers. We have counselor jobs. We have supervising positions. The thing I'd like to say to begin with all of these programs, I think I've got them all in there now. I know we've been growing and changing a lot. We have a chapel in every one of them. One of the hardest things to do as a parachurch organization, as a social service organization, is to keep Jesus in it. And Ray of Hope has worked hard at doing that. We have come up against a lot of pushback to try and do good things. That's wonderful that you're doing such a great work, and it's all good work, but you got to keep the gospel in there. So we have chapel in every one of those programs. I think why do we do what we do? Why is it that we're doing this? And if you go to the next slide, I think it touches on those two scriptures, and it's open your hand wide to the needy and poor in your land. That is a command of God. But whoever has this world's goods and sees his brother in needs, how can the love of God be in you if you see that and do nothing? So this morning, I may ruin you because I'm going to show you people who are very, very deep in need. And if you go to the next slide, let's just talk about Waterloo Region. Wonderful region. Just leave it there for a minute. Wonderful region. I've always really been proud of Waterloo Region. It's an awesome region, almost like it's a Bible Belt. Do you know that we have 416 churches in Waterloo Region? That's a lot. And it's one of the fastest growing regions for its size. Its business is great, high-tech stuff, people moving in. Lots of people want to live here. But there's a cost to that. There's a downside to that. That affluence has a big cost on the poor. And I'm going to explain to you and show you how that actually happens. By our affluence, we are making it tougher for the poor. Number one, do you know that Waterloo Region has the highest opioid addiction per capita in all of Ontario? This is the worst place to live. We have the highest opioid addiction in Ontario. If that's not bad enough, 3 years in a row, we have had the highest percentage increase in violent crime in all of Canada. I used to be proud of this community, this region. What has happened? What has really happened? Let's take a look at some of these figures. Keep going here. You can go through all of them. Oops, all of them on this. So go down another one. The LICO, low income cutoff, is how Canada measures poverty and so on. Waterloo Region has 73,000 people. What does LICO mean? There's a whole lot of things that it categorizes, but the basic one to help you understand is if you're spending 50% or more of your income on rent, you are unsustainably housed. Okay, that, if those people, 73,000, are at very high risk to become homeless. Why? Because if you get sick, you get injured, you get laid off, you use up your unemployment, you're not going to get back. You're going to fall behind and end up. And so, keep going with the, just bring them all up for this one. Yeah, there should be one more. So, these are just some stats on homeless people and so on. And I want to push through some of this stuff because it takes a bit of time. But yeah, the stats, if you go to Waterloo Region, are 2,000 to 2,500 people are homeless. A lot of people misunderstand. What do you mean? There's only 300 living out on the street. Well, homeless being, if you're in some of the shelters, House of Friendship, Mary's Place, YWCA, the Safe Haven, and so on. If you're in one of those places, you are not housed. No. You have a place for a couple of weeks. If you understand how those works, you get 14 days. And in that 14 days, you should be trying to find housing. Anybody know how long it takes to get affordable housing in this region? Yes, I think, has anybody read Bryce Bomer's book? What's that? Sorry? Yes, okay, a quick story. When I first started working at Oasis, which was for the homeless, and I talked to somebody, and they were living in their truck. And I said, come on, you're working part-time. You can get into it. Yeah, it takes a couple of years. I said, no, it doesn't. He says, yeah, go ahead, call them up yourself. So I said, I'm going to call them up, and I'm going to say, I am your best candidate. I am the one you want to do. How long am I waiting? They told me 8 years. I said, what? Oh, and that's if you don't get an apartment in the meantime. How many have heard of Bryce Bomer? Okay, you've read his book. Lives in the Balance, Lives Still in the Balance, and now he's done Persistent Poverty. Persistent Poverty, when he wrote that one, we had improved. We're up to 6.5 years now, or down to 6.5 years. Now you're only going to wait on average 6.5 years to get into housing. I can tell you stories about people that I have tried to help house and what that has done and how we've actually created a bigger problem by being what we think is right and nice and Christian. Anyhow, go to the next slide there, and I think this is a troubling cause. One of the trouble. Oh, and by the way, that 721, I just found out from services, that is now 733, so we've put it up as of this month. So the newest figure is 733. But these are some of the figures that people have to live on, and you stop and think about people coming to that place where they've used up all their unemployment, and now I deal with many people who are in that situation. They have had jobs, they have had houses, they have had families, and now they're on their own, and now the depression is so harsh because they're living in a room in a rooming house, and they're using all their money just to pay the rent. They have nothing, they have rent, and they have a bus pass, and then there's nothing to eat. So it makes it very difficult for them. A question for you. Stop and think about this. I don't know how many, let's see how many smiles I get out of this one. 25 years ago, what was that number? 7:33, I'll have to change that. 7:33 today, what was it 25 years ago? That's a fair long time ago, right? So would you all agree with me that things were half the price they are today? Wrong. No. 891. Go to the next slide. I've got the facts right here. $891 a month 25 years ago. Yes, Mike Harris and the Common Sense Revolution, but I'm nonpartisan. I'm not talking. Because if you look at that graph over there, that's Mike Harris, the first big drop. But it didn't matter who was in power. They kept putting it down and down and down and down. Why? Why did we keep taking from the poor? And I can show you examples today. We're still take from the poor to make sure the rich keep their good level of income. Why? Okay, I'll quote you. George Gilder's book, page 63. It says, the solution to the welfare problem, quote unquote. The rich should have more through reduced taxes, while the poor should have less to encourage them to get low-wage jobs rather than collect welfare. Are you kidding? When I read that, my mouth hit the floor. It was like, what is wrong with us? Fortunately, enough of us got after the government, told them they were completely off base, and in 2006, turned it around. Yes, we were down to $690 a month, and hold it, do the math. What's that? $733? That's $43 increase in a 13 years? Is that really an increase? The numbers may be bigger, but the value is a lot lower. So is it really? This graph is a really, really difficult one. That is an artist down in Toronto at Bloor and Young. He has this big, beautiful art gallery. Well, it's not an art gallery. It's an art space. And he has a big glass window, and then inside you can see what's displayed. And he displayed this on the wall, and people demanded he take it down. The government hated it. There was a lot of people really angry. Why? What you can't see that has been brought out there is there's the graph of when you pay people on welfare. Back then they called it welfare. Today it's Ontario Works. As you can see, when it was high, there's very little down there. When it dropped down, as it went down, the homeless or the people on it died. Those are names of people that were dying. The perfect recipe to kill off our unwanted poor citizens. It's like, that's awful. This is terrible. So have we turned it around? Well, we're trying to. Maybe a little bit late. We're trying to turn it around, but we still have 300 out there on the streets that can't get a place because we don't have a place. Maybe some of you I've lost track of all the articles I've read in the paper lately about condos going up. Big condo going up. What was it? Two condos last week. Waterloo, 314 new bedrooms and 167 units. Oh, this is great. And all this. A lot of people miss four little words in that article. I don't know if anybody read it, but if you can go back to it, read these four little words that most people don't understand. Hit me, because I know what it means. Replaces two lodging houses. Oh, no, that's 8 or 10 people in each of those houses. Those are what they call rooming houses. They don't call them rooming houses. That sounds bad. But 8 or 10 people are now evicted for no fault of their own. And where are they going to go? Because when they bulldoze those houses, they're gone forever. They don't pop up somewhere else. They don't show up anywhere. Nobody's building those houses. No. Those houses that have $600 a month for a room in a rooming house, they're full. There's no occupancy. The second that they're empty, they're filled again. Those people are now added. And we're having that happen regularly. I see almost every month that kind of thing. Right beside us on King Street, 6 houses were leveled. 6 of those places. Yeah, there was a few businesses as well. And they're putting up 484 unit apartment building or condo building. Now, I think if you go to the next slide, Yeah, the results are. Anybody heard of the 20,000 Homes campaign? Okay, Waterloo Region. This is why I'm proud of Waterloo Region. Surrey, BC, Waterloo Region, and Ottawa were offered to pilot this. All three cities were given the same thing to do it. Waterloo Region is the only one that did it. Back in 2014, we sent out 22 teams of four people each under the bridges into the alleyways, and we found 327 people. Couldn't count 327, we could only count 284 because they had to allow us to take their picture and answer 19 questions. And basically what that did was gave us an idea of what is going on outside. And that was at 3:30 in the morning. So if you wanted to join that team, you had to go at 3:30 in the morning and find these people. Now, you went in teams of four, for safety issues and so on. But we did it and started the 20,000 Homes campaign. I can tell you lots of stories about what the government did there, and I have never seen the government jump so fast. And we housed 40 people. I think it was actually 53 with enough money for 40. So it was really, it ended up being 28, but I get into that later. Go to the next slide. Here's the cost if we don't house them. So for about $10,000 a year, you can house somebody. If you stop and do the math, if we could only give them $100 a month, just another 100, I always say 120, that makes it 840, that makes does the math, that gives us $10,000 a year. So for $10,000 a year, we could house people by giving them that extra $100. Or we can pay $42,536. That's what you are paying through your taxes. Oh, and there's another cost to you that could be alleviated. What's that? Anybody ever use the hospital? You notice how long those lineups are? Talk to the paramedics. How often is it our homeless people that they're dealing with? People on opioids, people suffering. In fact, how many have heard of SHO, Supportive Housing of Waterloo? It's the big 30-unit apartment building they put up in Waterloo. November, they opened up another one, 9 units. So SHO, let's stop and look at that, okay? SHO is a place that they built, and they put the 30 most vulnerable, they kept it to men because they didn't want to mix. So the 30 most vulnerable men are in that place. Now, Grand River Hospital contacts them a year later and says, we just want to let you know, I won't give you the name, this man was in the hospital 68 times in 1 year. Oh, and do you know what the figures are now? They're 2010 figures, okay? 2010, it was $945 per visit. Every time you or I go to the hospital, it costs taxpayers, us, the hospital, $945. So around $1,000. Today, 8 years later, I think it's well over $1,000. So $68,000. Put him in SHO for 1 year. How many times did he go to the hospital his first year when he's housed? Twice. Oh my goodness, we just saved $66,000 on one person for one aspect of their life. Wow. Now, these figures include all the aspects, which are the policing, the courts, the healthcare, and all that kind of stuff. So if we would recognize that we can fix this problem. However, we've gone after, I don't know, maybe if some of you might have remembered 8 or 10 years ago, put food back in the budget. And it was down at Queen's Park, getting after politicians. Put food back in the budget. That was the $100. Oh, we can't afford it. Do you know how many people? Well, let's look at Waterloo Region. 8,000 people on OW. 8,000 people at $100 a month. That's a lot of money. Are you sure? Do you want to know how much money that is? Okay, look outside that box and let's take a look over here. People don't do this. There are 25,000 people in Waterloo Region right now that have an extra $2,000 a month to put into an RSP. And we can give them $700 a month back in tax break. Oh, so we can afford to give the rich, but we can't afford to give the poor, and there's a whole lot less of them? So, another sort of thing. Do you want to go to the next slide? So what does it lead to? Well, if you've been working with the homeless as long as I have, after 17 years and all the stories I hear, and I get into deeper conversations and so on, and I find out that the majority of men that I've talked to, it's almost the same scenario all the time, where they had a good job, they had a house, they had a family, they lost their job through, well, what's happened in Waterloo Region? We've kind of shifted from manufacturing to more high-tech stuff, computer stuff. In that change, a lot of people can't keep up. And what happens? They lose their job. And what happens? Now they're frustrated trying to get a job, and now they're separated, and now their kids don't want anything to do with them, and now they're getting lower and lower and lower. They've used up their UI. They've now lost anything they had in their house, and now they're in a rooming house by themselves. And if they're on the street, this is what happens. Why is the opioid crisis so bad in Waterloo Region? And it's because it's gotten tougher and tougher. These figures, I was talking to Bryce Balmer at a meeting in November, and he told me that number for 218, we haven't got the official numbers, but you'll see them. He said we're averaging two a week. And I just did the quick math. That's 104. So we've barely slowed that number down. Why? Why aren't we getting this slowed down? Then I think the scripture was read here this morning. When I think of Sodom, when I was a new Christian, and for many years as a Christian, I always thought the sin of Sodom, wasn't that sexual? But if you go to the next slide and actually read the words in this, the sin of Sodom was pride, fullness of food, abundance of idleness, and yet, with all of that, she did not strengthen the hand of the poor and needy. Pride, yeah, we've worked hard for what we have. We're proud. We got a good region here, and we're doing fullness of food. Has anybody been following the paper the last couple of weeks about Canada being the worst one of the worst for throwing out food? 58% of our food we throw out? Abundance of idleness. My goodness, we got TVs, and I remember when the videos first came out, the video games, and my kids were playing for 10 or 15 minutes, and that was a long time. Now that's nothing. You know, you barely get started in that amount of time. So we've got lots of time, lots of food, and we're proud of what we have. Why can't we strengthen the hand of the poor and needy? Do we strengthen the hand of the poor and needy? As a region, as a church, basically, I say the Church of Waterloo Region, 400 churches. My goodness, we got our work cut out for us. Go to the next slide. So what does it mean to strengthen the hand of the poor and needy? What's amazing about this, we all know the Matthew 25 about what you do for the least of these you've done for me. So that picture of Jesus on the park bench there, I wonder, you know, is that one of the folks we have downtown, where we're sitting there and he's just saying, help me? And that's what we're called to do. What gets me about this, and this is probably because I work with so many homeless people, so many poor people, what really strikes me about this is if I'm standing here right now and I knew that I was going to die in a little while, so would this message I'm sharing not be the most important thing I can think of passing on to you? This was Jesus' last sermon. This was his last message to the crowds. After this, in the next couple chapters, all you see is he's with the disciples. He's preparing them for what's coming. But he's only with the disciples. This is the last thing he says to us, the crowd. So it has a lot of validity. And I've never quite read it that way until I started working with the homeless and started realizing this is the gospel. This is reaching out. Let me just go back to what I said. There's in every one of the programs I'll show you about Ray of Hope, we preach the gospel. We have the gospel. Yes, we have the very first facility that we had, and the second and third, young offenders facilities. In a young offender facility, young offenders, you will know the law is young offenders have the right to freedom from all religions. In other words, you can't force any religion on them. So here's an interesting fact. Out at secure custody, Hope Manor, Houghton Petersburg, that's where the worst kids you hear about on the news, the ones that have done the most vicious, violent crime, yes, murder, that's where they're going, because that's the only secure custody facility in a large area of this part of Ontario. That's where they're going. So if you can't preach the gospel because they have the right to freedom from religion, we have a chapel. How come we have a 92% attendance rate? 92% of those kids going there, sentenced there, they're the worst ones. They're hearing the gospel. Grassroots, here it is. They're hearing it. But hold it, isn't that against the law? Absolutely. Except that they can watch TV, they can sit in their room, they can play a game, or if they choose to, they can come to chapel. Why are they coming to chapel? Because before I get into Ray of Hope's programs, those staff, yes, they're trained to supervise the kids, like a guard, but more emphasis we put on the relationship building, building relationships with those kids. They've been told they're lousy, they're no good, they're awful, they're like, for most of their life, probably why they're there. We are going to find something good and start to work on that and build relationships. And so they want to come. So in all of these programs, I can let you know that Ray of Hope is still preaching the gospel. Absolutely, in every program. But we're careful with it, too. We have to be careful not to overdo it, or because some of these programs are publicly funded. The government funds them. Here's a problem I'll share with you from my own experience. It's a story about a young woman who came to Oasis, came to the community center. She came in because she's a prostitute and she's a crack addict. She came in because she needs food. Free food, she's coming to get the food. She comes to get the food over and over, starts to find out, oh, you have all these other programs. Oh, you have Rhythms of Hope and Healing Hearts and all this, you know, Alpha program and all that, a chapel, of whatever. But for some reason, none of us really knows why, she started to come to the chapel. We have chapel at 3 o'clock every Sunday. We get about 30, 35 people come to the chapel every Sunday. She started coming. She sat there and listened. I don't know why, maybe just to get out of the cold or something. She listened. She heard the gospel clear and straight. Here it is, Jesus coming, showing us the way, dying, so on. She heard it clearly. She saw us worshiping Jesus. She saw us praying for each other when people were in need. And after about 12 or 15 times, she said, I need this Jesus. I can't live like this. I need this Jesus. Of course, we go, yes, that's what we're here for. That's what we want. That's what we pray for to happen. She believed on the Lord Jesus. She prayed the sinner's prayer. She believed just as every one of you believes. That's what it is to be saved. That's what it is to be a Christian. Here's the problem, though. We have a problem. What? We had nowhere to put her that night. So what did she do? The only thing she knew. She got saved. And then went back out to the only thing she knew, to sell her body, to get a place for the night, to have some money for tomorrow. Oh, the gospel seems kind of empty. That's why I'll show you some programs. We have an addiction residence. So, great that you have the good news, but you better back it up with good works. But it better be backed up with good works, not focused on the good works. So, still preach the gospel, but have the good work. So if you want to go to the next slide. How does Waterloo Region strengthen the hand of the poor? A Ray of Hope is one of the ways. There's many different ways. as you know, lots of other organizations. But Ray of Hope is one of those. By serving the poor and needy in practical, relative ways. Change the next slide. So this is Hope Manor now. So we call it secure custody. As you can see, there's a fence all the way around it. There's more buildings. It's a bigger $5 million building and all the rest of it. So because with secure custody, you have to have very rigid rules to follow. And everything is locked. We don't have bars. We have unbreakable glass. Nobody's broken any. so it's all very secure with a fence around it and so on. But as I say, we preach the gospel there. If you want to go to the next slide, this is the old Hope Harbor home, which we call open custody. So it's a lesser crime. It's probably less violent when kids come there. The doors are open. They can walk out. However, if they do, they're probably going to go to secure custody. So they have the option to walk out. However, they are encouraged to be involved in the program. So they're involved. We use the high school for the gymnasium. We use different community services in the community. But it's our open custody facility. If you go to the next one, this is the youth reintegration program. So I'll tell you, this one's dear to my heart for a couple of reasons, and I'll share. Number one, what is this? Basically, it's taking kids that are coming out of custody. It's like the Young Offenders Act. You get sentenced to 6 months, a year, 2 years, whatever, in custody. That day comes. It doesn't matter how good you're doing. You're going home. You're out because the judge said 6 months. On 6 months' date, you walk out the door. We don't feel that that's a really good way to do it. And when I was young, running the Young Offender Facility, it was the Juvenile Delinquents Act, which basically said you have to go there for 6 months, but it's up to the director when you're ready to go. So I made a rule for myself because I thought, I want to have equality for everybody, no matter whether I like them or not. My rule was, you get to honor level and you stay there for a month and you're free to go. You can do that in 4 months, but it might take you a year. They took that away from us because obviously some people abused that in the position I was in. And so now it's a Young Offenders Act with an absolute date. That date comes and they go home to what? Probably the dysfunctional family that had something to do with them getting in trouble with the law. So we started what we called aftercare, where it was, kid is getting close to that time to go. You know he's going home to a dysfunctional family. So which staff member is he closest to? Let's work with that. And would they be willing to go along with him when he gets out, meet the family, see his environment, meet some of his friends in the neighbor, talk to the school, deal with all those things, and support him in that? And the provincial director said, John, you do that, you'll find yourself in court. You cannot do that. You cannot, and the Young Offenders Act's pretty clear, you cannot associate, not even acknowledge that I know you in public, because that would be breaching confidentiality. And custody is really, in open custody, it wasn't the building, it was me, the person they're in custody under. So if I go out with them, they're still in my custody, but they're supposed to be free because their time's up. No, John, you'll find yourself in court. And I said, well, I'm sorry, but it's the right thing to do. Just let me warn you, if you take me to court, I'm bringing the media. And they know it's the right thing to do. Oh, you know, he was pretty upset. Went that way for about 8 years, and then his boss asked me what, it's a long story, but he asked me basically what the right thing to do was, and I told him, and he says, I want a proposal on my desk. And he said, I said, no, it's a couple thousand dollars a year. I just work it out of the budget. And he says, no, get me a proposal. Oh, fine, okay, one page, lousiest proposal I ever put together. Here's what I do, here's why I do it, here's how much it costs. And then my boss comes to me, the CEO of Ray of Hope, and says, John, what did you tell him? Why? He just sent us a check for $20,000 for your aftercare program. $20,000? I told him it was two. Call him up. Why are you sending me $20,000? Well, I want you doing it in all the facilities in the area. I haven't got the authority there. That they're not going to voluntarily give their time. The only thing I paid was for their expense to drive there and back, and the coffee and donut or whatever they took them out to talk. But they're meeting with the kids three times a week. They're sitting down, getting to talk to the parents about how they can help that kid never recidivate, how they can go to the school, how they can go to the friends, or even talk about their environment and get them. It worked in our center. He set up a situation, alternative measures. John, you're the speaker. You tell these other facilities how to do it. I did that. I set up a system. I set up a budget. I did all that. Didn't work. It did not work because, no, we're probably the only, well, in that case, we were the only Christian organization. And so didn't have too many staff members that were guards who wanted to volunteer their time to take the kids out. So it didn't work. So now the government pays us. Now the government says, this is the most effective program in all of Ontario. That's like, whoa, whoa, what? Based on what? We're keeping track that we have around 40 kids a year that we do this for, but we're not keeping track of how successful. Like, what's that based on? So they basically said, most of the kids going through this, 5 years later, have never gotten in trouble again. And if a young offender goes for 5 years without getting in trouble, he's probably going to go the rest of his life. Oh, and do you know what the stats in that are? Well, our prisons are what, a 10% success rate? 90% of the guys in prison have been there before. Oh, and the average guy that goes to prison will keep going until he's done 17 years of time before he gets it. That's statistically the average. So $240 a day times 17 years, you do the math. One kid saved would fund this program for probably 25 years because it's one man's wage and his expenses to drive around and some of the coffees that he would buy for kids. That's it. So this is the cheapest program we have and one of the most effective for saving Canadians a lot of money. Because I think it works out to somewhere in the range of $2 million you save on each person that you don't send to prison. So if you want to go to the next slide, and he worked with me at Anchor House for a while. That was the old Anchor House. It's now the Youth Addiction Residence. So we can take six people in here. It's voluntary. One of the tough parts about it is it's dry. Now, if you understand wet and dry, wet means that they're still using while they're learning. Dry means, sorry, but if you're coming here, there's no drugs, no alcohol, no cigarettes, no vaping, none of those things. This basically is a place you come, and if you talk to, I guess just to make a long story short, talk to a kid that's there, 17, 18 years old. Why is a kid there, 17 or 18, voluntarily putting himself under our direction, told when to get up in the morning, told when to go to bed, told he has to do dishes, he has to do the cleaning, he even has to come down to the community center once every other week and clean the whole place. Why would he subject himself to that at that age? At that age, there's no way I would. It's a different world. It's because mom and dad are the ones bringing the drugs home. Oh, my goodness. No wonder he has to get out of the house. We can't just get him out of the school. Go to the next slide. We have three other programs. So there's four addiction programs now. Community-based, day treatment, and parent support. Day treatment, or community-based treatment, is where we started to do that kind of thing, and the teachers then got involved, and the principal of KCI, downtown Kitchener, said, we need your counselor here 20 hours a week. And we said, no, we don't have the money. Here's the money. They threw the money at us. Here's the money, please. And so now we have a person there that works with about 18 different families on average. Other schools heard about it and said, we need one. We are now in five high schools, 20 hours a week. They're all paying it out of their, I guess it's an alternative budget or something that they use. Anyhow, we have one of those counselors, his other 20 hours is used for the other 20 schools, and there's eight of them saying, we've got the money, please send us a counselor. That's a hard counselor to get. But if you know anybody that's got the social work degree, got some work in counseling, and is willing to grow, We are definitely looking for people. Those aren't even on the list that I told you about, seven counselors, or seven positions. The day treatment is one right on site, so it's upstairs at the community center, and basically it's kids coming in there. That's a wet program, as in these kids would never go voluntarily into a drug treatment program. So they'll come to us because it's like, hey, we're not telling you what to do. We're not going to stop you from doing your drugs. You just do what you think is right. But we're going to, I think the way that whenever I talk to the caseworker there, he explains that it's like they approach them from, you're driving the bus and I'm just getting on it. So generally when kids, I say, so where on the bus am I? I usually start at the back and I slowly get to move forward until I can sit up front with them. They're still driving the bus. But I'm saying, don't you remember when you went down this road the last time, what you got into? Would you like to try a different road? The focus is not the drugs. The focus is not the addiction. The focus is, what is it in your life that you think the only way to cope is with drugs? Maybe there's something a little less harmful to cope with that. As in, all of us here have all kinds of battles in our lives. We didn't have to turn to drugs to cope with them. We can turn to other things that are far less harmful. And they help us cope. Anyhow, I better get moving here. Parent support group, if there's anybody that you know that has kids that are getting involved in drugs, please have them call Ray of Hope. We have a parent support group. They can get involved in that with other parents. And it's an 8-week workshop, but you're with other parents dealing with the same issues, and you're getting an understanding of how to talk to your kids about that thing that they think drugs is the answer. Anyhow, go to the next slide. I realize my time's running out here. Morning Glory Employment, you've probably heard of that. Hefner Toyota created a space in their Taj Mahal and gave us that space, so we have it there. We train people there in customer service. At Family and Children's Service Office up on Ardelt, we have a cafe built in there. And then we have moved the Morning Glory on King Street. We sold that and moved it into our kitchen because it was just a whole lot better stewardship to say, we got two programs. They work in the kitchen from 6 a.m. until 2, and then we basically start the community service, well, our community meal for the homeless later. If you want to go to the next slide, alternative education. So this is for kids transitioning out of custody. It's kids that are truant, and we've even had a couple of kids who are expelled from a school. Let's have them come to this, and if they attend 80% of the time, then we can work them back into their school if that's appropriate. It's not always appropriate. Go to the next slide. Welcome Home is our refugee house. So we have 15 units for refugees. So a lot of the Syrian people that came in, we have there. Two family units and the rest are a single or a couple. Go to the next slide. Yeah, that's just the atmosphere for them. So we have a community meal every Wednesday. We use the gospel for teaching English, teaching Canadian culture, and all that kind of stuff. So they have a chapel as well. Want to go to the next one? This is the Ray of Hope Community Center, the one that I've been running for the last 17 years for the homeless. And if you go to the next slide. This actually was something that, this is kind of personal, this top one, Jeremiah 22:13. It's one of those situations where you're having a quiet time and you're just reading your Bible on a general, I kind of follow a Bible thing where I can go through the Bible, the entire Bible, every 2 years, I believe it is. And so as you're going through, you're reading stuff. Well, when I read, was this not knowing me, says the Lord? What is that? What's this not knowing me? And I had to go back, give justice to the poor and needy, and then it was well with him. Wow. That's what it is to know the Lord. And I guess for me, my quiet times are so important. My being in the presence of God is the thing that makes the difference, and it's what drives me. I can hardly wait for the times when I can sit down with nothing to do for a couple hours and really get to know, what is it, God? What is it you're trying to tell me? What are you you know, what am I needing to learn? So this was kind of very special for me. Truly knowing God is giving justice to the poor and needy. You want to go to the next slide? So here's our mayor, Kitchener mayor, Barry Verbanovic. That's his first day as mayor. That's not this time, that's the last time. So his very first day as mayor with his municipal team putting on a meal in our kitchen. So 250 meal groups have come to serve. If you go to the next slide, this is, I think it's Grandview Baptist that picture is. But we're serving, we're averaging over 200 people every single day of the year. We're open 365. People used to call and ask about holidays, and I just forget. Don't call me ever again. We're always open. Always. Every day. Even the 66th day on the leap year. We're open every day. Go to the next one. This is an interesting one because we said, hold it. We've got, I think we had about 94 churches coming and putting meals on, and that was so awesome. But are we robbing the guests of the chance to actually put the meal on? So we offered it to them. It's wide open to any of the 200 guests. If you want to come, show up at this time. We'll sit down and we'll talk about what that entails. What does that mean? There's no commitment. You just come and see. So basically, we lock their cell phones and things up in the office. They come in. They have to follow all the public health guidelines. Yeah, the hairnets. I wouldn't have to wear a hairnet, but I'd have to wear a beard net. You know, all those things, washing your hands properly and all that. So they've learned how to do this. Now, Chef D, if any of you know, the TV celebrity, he comes once now every 2 months. He'll come once just to teach them how to make a really special meal. He always brings very expensive food in, which is pretty neat. This is one of those meal teams. The guy in the yellow is very, special to me. I can talk about him publicly. There's no confidentiality here because it's public. He was one of the worst people. I booted him out for beating people up. I booted him out for stealing bicycles. I booted him out for trying to sell drugs. I have pictures in my head. If I could show them to you, I'd put them on that screen and you'd be appalled at him just wailing on people. Booted him out, booted him out, booted him out. Finally, he went to jail. In jail, we wrote him letters. When he got out of jail and came back, he realized, man, these people actually care. And so he came and said, okay, all right, I get it. This Jesus, I need him. It was a bumpy road. It's a long story, but he did get saved. Then helped him as he went to Teen Challenge. Went through Teen Challenge, finished it, graduated, took the intern. Finished the intern, they hired him. You can look it up on the website. Derek Corliss is the National Director of Intake for all Teen Challenge Canada. This guy, who we had convinced to do dishes, is now the director in Teen Challenge Canada. There's another guy, same sort of story, but he came back in construction. He is running our sound system in our chapel. He is leading small groups in our chapel. So there's stories like that. I could go on and on. But if you want to go to the next slide. So it's in the dining room for 250 people. So here's the thing I tell churches that are already serving, because I come in and I talk to many churches, and it's like, if you've got a meal team together and you say, okay, I'm going to sacrifice some time and some money to get in there and serve these poor people, and so you're serving them. This is our dining room for 250, so you're serving 200 people. Yeah, it's expensive. Yeah, it takes time. I would say if you want to do that, that's great. 10 or 12 people is the best. But recognize you're not just feeding the poor. When they come in for that free meal, all they're thinking is, I am hungry, I have no money, get some food. But then once they're fed and they sit down, there's lots of people around, and I need volunteers to do this as well, but there are lots of people that have been there for a long time, and they know because there's other things that they get to do. You can go to the chapel. You can go to an alpha program. You can go to the worshipers, jammers, the worship jammers. There's sermoners, a number of different things. I just realized my time is up, so I got to quick go through. But the thing is, as I was working with these people, and after a couple of years, one of the guests came to me. He had gotten saved, and he said, John, you do the same thing every time somebody gets saved. And I thought, I think I know where that is, but okay, I know you want to tell me. Well, okay, so what exactly are you going to tell me? He says, as soon as somebody gets saved, you want to help them get a job. What's wrong with that? Some of these people will never get a job. They've been told they're no good for so long. And I started to have to think about that. And after about 6 months of really meeting people and starting to ask those questions of the ones that I recognize have mental health issues and will never get a paid job, I stopped and thought, man, these people, what have they been told their whole life, right from their parents to their teachers to everybody? You're no good. You'll never amount to anything. You are useless. You'll never amount to, you're no good. How can we change that message? How can we say you are good enough? And that's where, I think if you go to the next slide, I think that's where it shows some, okay, maybe not. Anyhow, in the programs that we provide, it's saying you are good enough. So we have Rhythms of Hope. What's that? Well, it's two students from Laurier come down, and they teach people how to play guitars. We have 6 brand new acoustic guitars. We have 6 jamba drums, a piano. They learn to play. But I also emphasize, when you're doing this, I think it's great that somebody is learning some new skill. I think this is wonderful because they'll feel good. They'll have better self-esteem. But that's not what this is about. It's about belonging. It's about relationships. And now they come, and they are important. No, you are good enough. In fact, with Rhythms of Hope, not only are you good enough, I have a book at the back that's from our 50th anniversary. Not only are you good enough, but will you play a song for our open house? Will you play some songs at Conestoga Mall for our 50th anniversary? And now a pastor downtown has asked, could they come and play in their worship time? So one of these songs you'd sing here, they would come up and sing basically their song. Now we're not just saying you're good enough. We're saying you are important. In fact, we can't do this without you. So they're getting the opposite message. And that's why that's so important. This is our basically, a lot of people think of it as a food hamper. We call it a marketplace because you come in, you get so many points for a person, for a family, for kids, whatever, and you go shopping. So you get points for food, you get points for hygiene, and then there's points for diapers and things if you have a young child. Got rid of the lineup by doing basically appointment-based. So there's no more lineup, no more fighting over lineups. You come in, you show your ID, you show your appointment card. They say, when's your next appointment? And then you come in. So if you wanted to volunteer, but you're, 200 people that are high needs and, you know, difficult people, okay, come over to this one, and you are basically one-on-one. You have one guest that you're helping, and you're going shopping. You're building a relationship. You're teaching them budgeting. Oh, and you're teaching them nutrition. Because in this, what you can't see is where this person taking the picture is. There is all the fruits and vegetables, and over on the other side are the crackers, cookies, and chips. The vegetables and fruits and stuff, 1 point each. Crackers, cookies, chips, 6 points each. So it's basically encouraging you get stuff that's good for you. You want to go to the next slide? This is our foot care ladies. We have two volunteers who are foot care nurses come in, and they volunteer their time to do foot care. Also the same with haircuts. If you want to go to the next slide. Specialized medical outreach. Every Thursday night, we have a registered nurse who comes down and does primary care. Go to the next slide. These are the programs. I guess I had them backwards to where I was thinking. But anyhow, this is the worship jammers. And then in that room, when we built the renovation, I said, I want 2 program rooms for these programs so that people, and that's where we have, if you go to the next slide, I think it has, oh, this is our chapel. Our 30 or so people attend chapel every Sunday at 3 o'clock. Go to the next slide. These are all the programs that we have. So we have about 8 of those programs are those like worship jammers. The Healing Hearts is making cards and things, making jewelry and so on. Then there's Crafters Corners. There's Closely Knit. There's many different things. And then the Poverty Awareness. Yeah, so if anybody here is interested. Obviously, it doesn't seem like a big youth group. I do a youth event, so I get the kids in a youth group together, and I like to have at least 40. I've got one next month, and they've only got 20 kids in the youth group, so it's kind of like, okay, let's try and find a couple other churches that have some kids, and we'll make it a 40. It's just a very effective sort of thing. I do a street walk as well, basically teaching people about where are all these, all the services that are so needed that you and I don't even think of, and I go through some of those things. So basically, it's a 40-minute walk. But it takes me about 2 hours because I touch on 45 different organizations in downtown. What do they do and how do they help and who do they help? If you go to the next slide, oh yeah, our 2,000 volunteers. Yeah, so we have a special software to keep track of that. Can't go ahead to the next slide. This is a young man who basically is one of those with mental health issues. So at 11 or 12, yeah, we could all have a paper route, but he never really grew beyond the paper route. He's now 64. He's telling me he's going to retire. This is a plaque from Carl Zehr, the mayor, because he delivered the newspaper for 25 years every single day, never missed a day. I don't know too many people who can say that about their work. And he's up at, 5, 6 in the morning getting these flyers and things together and so on. Anyhow, go to the next slide. Maybe go through some of these a little quicker. I think it's, just go to the last slide then, just flick through them. Yep, so these are just some of the pictures of people and our Crafters Corner, our supporter programs, tell you stories about each one of these. Keep going. Each of these is a person. Coldest Night of the Year, if you want to get a team together, that's our fundraiser. You go out for a coldest night. These are where I get some of the bibliography and carry on. I think if you just click through the last slide, it just lists a number of different things. So if there's anything that you want me to talk to or groups to talk to or get together to put a meal on or advocate. One thing just to finish off here is that with all this stuff going on in Waterloo Region, it's overwhelming. We got human trafficking growing. We've got drug problems growing. We got now marijuana issues that I didn't even get into here. All these things going on, it's overwhelming. And I'm saying, I give up. Lord, I don't even know how to pray. I don't even know where to pray. So if there's anybody that's interested or you know any prayer warriors, tell them. Monday, 12 noon, come down to the Ray of Hope Community Center because I'm leading an intercessory prayer time. I don't take requests. I only take God's requests. And we're basically getting together. I got about 15 churches, have at least one person from each. And we get together and just say, God, we don't know how to pray for this region. We don't even have a clue. Show us how to pray. And then we're basically praying what he puts on our hearts and just praying for this region and starting to see some things happening. And that's what excites me because I'm overwhelmed. I don't know how to pray. Anyhow, so there's many things that you can do, and I'll just turn it back over to you then. Okay.